Okay, good morning. My name is David Laser, and it's my great privilege and honour today to introduce you to one of the more remarkable men of our times. Dr. Izzeldin Abuelaish is a Palestinian refugee, a Muslim, an Arab, a father, a husband, an eminent Harvard-educated gynecologist and obstetrician, a Nobel Peace Prize nominee, and the first Palestinian doctor to have been given residency inside an Israeli hospital. The New York Times has described him as a rarity, a Gazan at home among Israelis. At one time in his distinguished career, Dr. Abuelaish was delivering more Jewish babies in Israel than any other Jewish doctor, not to mention helping countless couples, Arab and Jewish, overcome infertility. He studied medicine in Cairo before obtaining a diploma in obstetrics and gynecology from the Ministry of Health in Saudi Arabia in conjunction with the University of London. He then studied fetal medicine and genetics in Milan and Brussels before enrolling in a master's program in public health at Harvard. Later, he became a senior researcher at the Goethner Institute in Tel Aviv. He worked at the World Health Organization in Afghanistan. He ran a private clinic for the poor in Gaza, all of this before being appointed recently to the position of associate professor at the School of Public Health attached to the University of Toronto, where he now lives. Born in the Jabalaya camp in the Gaza Strip, our distinguished guest has experienced many terrible things in his life. Most notably, most catastrophically, in early 2009, when three of his daughters and niece were killed by Israeli rocket attack on his home. His daughters were in their bedroom at the time. Immediately after this attack, Dr. Abuelaish's anguish was heard across Israel and the world when he managed to speak by mobile phone to his friend, the Israeli journalist Shlomi Eldar. That interview, broadcast live on Israeli national television, became the most vivid and shocking account of the war in Gaza. The first time, in fact, that Israelis were forced to confront their own actions during the Gaza war. Our guest of honour, in effect, became the voice and the face of the Palestinian agony. Following his daughter's death, Dr. Abuelaish chose not the path of vengeance, but in keeping with his life's purpose, the path of coexistence. He set up a foundation for his daughters dedicated to changing the status of women in the Middle East, and he wrote a book called I Shall Not Hate, a book about one man's lifelong commitment to peace and reconciliation. He's been described as a modern-day Albert Schweitzer, a Palestinian Martin Luther King, a secret bridge builder between enemies. Would you please join me in welcoming Dr. Izzeldin Abuelaish? Dr. Abuelaish, welcome to Australia and welcome to Sydney. That's quite a reception. I wonder if I could start by asking you...
I would like to thank you. And as introduced me as Palestinian Muslim, but above all, I am a human being, as you, that we all belong to this human family. It's a moving moment for me, and even today, I didn't tell you, David, because of the jet lag today, I didn't sleep. I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning to find many missed calls and emails. And it was a moment of happiness, inspiring to everyone, that President Obama today, he gave his speech, and to quote and to refer to the book and to the message that I am trying to spread, and that this is the right way, that's the right approach. Our efforts are not in vain. There is an open ears, open hearts and minds, and what do we need is to act and to move forward.
It is indeed a historic day that the American president makes this speech, and we come at a moment, a crossroads in history, and a moment during the Arab Spring when there's the call for democracy all through the Arab world. But I wonder whether we could just go back in time a little bit. I wonder whether you could describe what it was like for us to be born in the Jabalaya camp and to grow up there.
I was born, raised, lived in a Jabalia refugee camp as a refugee with the full meaning to be a refugee. That you are in need, you are deprived of the vital needs as a human being, as a child, that I never tasted my childhood. As if I was born to suffer, and my life was to fight to survive. In a time others are living to fight. But I was blessed. And that's the first message I can say to you. This is the hope. My suffering and hundreds of millions of children's suffering is man-made. It's not from God. It's people like us. And this is the hope that we can challenge those man-made challenges. Those man-made suffering of not accepting it and speaking loudly by actions that we will never give up. I succeeded. I dreamed to be a medical doctor. And the second message is to dream big. Your children, you and others, no one can prevent us from dreaming. I can prevent someone from eating, from movement, but the dreams, all of us can dream. Dream to be a medical doctor, and to achieve my dream, I have to work hard. I succeeded, it took time. But at the end, I reached there. But how many are waiting behind? Millions are there who are asking us to give them hand, to take them. And that's what do we need if we succeeded and we achieved our goals, not to forget that there are hundreds of millions behind. Give them hand. Give them a smile. Think of them. That's our mission in life.
Dr. Abulash, I want to bring you to your story and the specifics of your family and your growing up. Your family became refugees during the Arab-Israeli War of 1948. Where was the village that your family came from?
It was a village for a family that were wealthy, with the land, with everything, where Sharon's farm is settled now, close to Sderot.
Are you saying your family farm is where now Ariel Sharon's farm
yes,
is?
Yes. It's a village called Huj. Till now, I visit the kibbutz and close to it, Kibbutz Dorot, where they have the relationship with my family as Palestinians and Israelis and Jewish Palestinians who live together. We talk about a coexistence just now. We used to live, Jewish, Muslims, and Christians, before 1948. Until now, I go there to meet them, to see those people who knew my parents and my grandfather, my four-grandfather, and the whole family, and to show me, this is the cemetery. This is Abul Aish lands.
Do you still have the ownership papers for?
We have the taboo till now, and we have it. No one can forget. But what do we want to understand? Can we learn from the past to build the present and the future? Not to be prisoners all of the time of the past.
I want to bring you back to your life, and I want to bring you back to the fact that you grew up, you were born in 1955 when the Gaza Strip was under Egyptian rule, and then in 1967 it went to Israeli rule, and I think that's when you first experienced an Israeli soldier at the age of 12. What was that like for a young boy?
In 1967, during the 6 days war, I thought it's the end of the world. When we were collected, all of the refugees of the camp in one square, it's not a square, it's a place surrounded by tanks, soldiers pointing the guns. I asked myself, what are they going to do? Are they going to kill us and to bury us in this big hole? It's a moment, and the war that I hate. In war, and war divides and separates the mother from the child, because someone may think of the war in the soldier who is carrying the gun, who kills and then may be killed. The war is not. It's the mother who is killed and loses her child. It's the brother, it's the sister. What do we don't see on the screen as a result of the war is far more, tens of times, what did we see on the screen? War. It's a fire that burns everything.
You're 12 years old when you see your first Israeli soldier, but then 2 years later you have a different experience of the Israeli. What is that experience?
I look to the positive side of that experience. At the age of 14, to go to work in the summer holiday, in the time of children, and my children now, I plan their summer holiday, where to go and what to do. But for Palestinian children, summer holidays and weekends is just to run, to find some place to work, to earn some money to support their families. And that's why I said, I fought to live. I went to work.
Inside Israel.
Inside Israel. I worked there for 40 days in the chicken coops. I counted the moments, the days, 40 days. I want to be with my mother. I want to be with my brothers, my family. It's 40 days, like 40 years. But at the end, I earned 400 liras. And those 400 liras, 1 week later, Ariel Sharon, who was the commander for the Gaza Strip, demolished our house as other houses. And it's another moment that I hate. To see anyone to be homeless, it's the one of the most difficult moments in my life. But with the 400 liras, we succeeded to buy another house in the camp in which we lived till 2002.
So at the age of 15, you're actually responsible for building a new house for your family. But I'm just interested, before you come back to Gaza, during those 40 days, how do you come to see the Israeli family that you're living with?
I see the people as people. They are human. How did the mother care about me? And later on, it was in 1970, in 1994, after 24 years, after I became a doctor practicing in Israeli hospitals, and they knew about me. I participated in a conference in Jerusalem. I said, it's time to go to visit that family. I went there thinking of them. If the mother is alive, if she is doing well, I went and to knock the door of that house as if I bought it just today. I didn't forget it. I know it. And when she came, they thought any other Palestinian, I came with the Palestinian card, with the Palestinian plate. They thought I am a businessman because they have business. I said, no, I am Izzeldin, the one who worked for you. She said, I remember you. I remember these days as a scene moving in front of me, and said, it's not your place. And we are proud. And that's the message. We need to learn, how similar are we?
We need to learn, how similar are we? This extraordinary voice that you're hearing is that of Dr. Izzeldin Abolash, the Palestinian doctor whose three daughters and niece were killed in an attack by Israeli soldiers in Gaza just 2 years ago now. This is ABC Radio National from the Sydney Writers' Festival. And back now to David Laser with the doctor.
What was your primary motive in becoming a doctor? Why did you want to become a doctor?
The motive... As a child, I was sick with rheumatic fever. And I spent some time in the hospital. And education for us as Palestinians is for survival and to live, to get a better job. So I planned, I dreamed, just I want to go to study at the university to get a better job. Being the eldest, I have to take responsibility and to help my parents. I worked hard and I didn't plan it. As I said, I dreamed. I applied for the Egyptian universities to get a scholarship. And thanks to Egypt, who helped the Palestinians and other countries to study at the Egyptian universities. And I waited for 1 year, where I got the answer that I was accepted to study medicine.
Did you have a sense, though, that you say in your book that doctors could be messengers of peace? Did you have a sense as a young man that medicine was the way to build bridges between people?
I fully believe in it, because medicine, it has one face, it has one culture, it has one color. Which face, culture, and color? It's the human face to save lives, to give, to heal, and to treat. The happy moment for me in my practice when I handle a baby to his mother, to start a new life and to give life to others, or a woman to come willing to be pregnant and to help her to come to say, pregnancy test is positive, because I know and I value a children in our life and that we need them. And within the borders of the hospital, we treat all equal. We don't discriminate.
Were there any Jewish patients who were troubled by the fact that you're a Palestinian doctor?
It was my goal. I wanted them to know that I am Palestinian. And from where? From Gaza Strip or from Jabalia camp. And what mothers and women care about is just to get the good care, a good doctor who is listening. And I am satisfied, proud of my practice, that many of them, when they used to come to the clinic to see me, Israeli, Jewish, Muslims, others, to say to me, the Jewish woman, it's good that you are here, Izzeldin, and not David or Moshe or others. It's you. It's not where are you. It's you who make things as a human. It's not being a Jewish or a Muslim. It's a person, your humanity, And that's what do we want to understand and to practice, that the most holy thing in the universe that I believed in and I will continue my life defending it is a human being and the freedom. Freedom of all, freedom of sickness, of poverty, of disease, of being homeless, of being occupied or oppressed, because I believed your freedom is from my freedom. And we must all be free, and that no one was born not free, and no one should pay any price to get his freedom.
Dr. Abolesh, though, you're delivering Jewish babies. You're delivering future Jewish soldiers, Jewish occupiers. What do your own people say?
Why do we want to stigmatize it, to say why I am delivering babies?
No, but I'm asking
a
you.
A human being.
I'm asking you.
Why this stigma and label? I am delivering babies who deserve the life, who deserve the right, away from that. We must get beyond this. I am Palestinian, you are Australian, this is Jewish, this is a Christian. I am delivering babies with the hearts, with the minds, where babies and the children are the beauty of life. That's what do we want to understand and to practice and to change this language of labeling and using that. This language is the reason behind this divide.
Did you write? When you came back to Gaza and you talked to your family and you talked to your friends about your work, did they not say to you, but the very question I've put to you, you are delivering future Israeli soldiers? Is that how you responded to your own people?
I can say to you, the Palestinian people, I trust every people and I am confident in everyone. And I expect everyone to be human as I am. And the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, they have the same feeling. And what did I do? It was in the daylight. I came here today. It's in the daylight. Not hiding what I am doing. And they were proud of what did I do. And I did my part. Even to expose Palestinian patients to Israeli doctors. And to bring Israeli people to meet. It wasn't a message just to practice medicine. I used it and every minute of my time to bring people together, to know more and to know each other.
It wasn't always easy for you to get to work, though, was it? You had to go through numerous security checkpoints to get from Gaza into Israel. Can you describe what that was like for you?
This may be another lesson for each of us to learn. Crossing the borders is another story. With intimidation, with suffering. But I didn't give up. All of my time, I didn't allow them, the soldiers, to direct me or to feel angry and outraged because I was focused, my eyes, all of the time. I want to reach the hospital, that there is a woman waiting for me for the treatment. And even I can say to you, I said, let them do whatever they want. I don't want to lose control. And that's what do they want? I will never. And even we need to use the wisdom and our talent. When they tried that, to say to me, wait, I have to wait. What do I do? I have my laptop, I have my mic box, and to start reading and doing something, I am boiling maybe from inside because I know there are people there waiting. And when they call me, I try to show them that I don't care and I didn't listen. I am not a rush. Yes, that's what do we want. I am not wrong. We are calling you. I said I am busy. reading, doing things. And that's what do we want. Don't give up. Be determined, be focused. And at the end, he has to learn the lesson. Me, I learned before. And it's time for him to learn to respect others and to value the time of others and to show passion and compassion to others.
In your book, you reveal that the most excruciating delay in the security checks that you have to go through to get back into Gaza or from Gaza to Israel was to get to see your wife who is dying in an Israeli hospital. Can you tell us about that, please?
I can say it was the journey to hell. That day, it was the journey to death. I left my home 16th of August 2008, leaving my wife, my children, to go where I got a few offers in other countries where I wanted to be every day with my children. And 2 weeks later, I received an email from my daughter, Shada, telling me that her mother is feeling unwell and they are planning to take her to the Israeli hospital. I did everything while I was in Belgium and I planned to return. In a rush, I want to be close to my wife who was waiting and calling. Izzeldin, when are you coming? She left her children and she is alone in the hospital. It took me more than 30 hours just to be 1 or 2 hours drive to reach and be close to my wife that I wanted to see her conscious and at least to talk to her. To ask her, I saw her in coma, in the intensive care, and just a few days later, she passed away.
So you were left as a single father of 8 children, and that was 4 months before the invasion of Gaza in response to Qassam rocket attacks into Israel. Can you bear to tell us what happened that dreadful day?
When I lost my wife, I thought it's the end of the world because I believe children must and should be raised with their, especially with their mother. The mother is the one who cares, who sacrifices, who breastfeeds, who gives love. And now I am burned by that fire. And my religion as a Muslim taught me that the orphan is not the one who loses the father. The orphan is the one who loses the mother. But thanks to my daughter, Bisan, that I can write books about her, who was 20, who was about to get her BA a few months later, who became the mother, sister, friend, the brother to all of us, and to say to me, you must continue your life. You must continue your work. Count on God and on our support. And Bisan said, now I realized, because the students, they think academic exams are the most difficult in life. After she lost her mom, she said, I realized that the academic exams are the easiest in life. The most difficult thing in life our life exams. And then 16th of January 2009, quarter to 5 p.m., is the day when I was sitting with my daughters planning as I got two offers. One, to go to University of Toronto, and the second, to Harvard University. Seconds after I left my daughter's room, less than 5 seconds, I was in the salon. I didn't believe it. When I saw the smoke, the dust, the chaos everywhere, I realized it's my house, my daughter's room. Those lovely, bright, beautiful, successful daughters that I am proud of. I don't want anyone to see. What have I seen? Where is Bisan? Where is Mayar? Where is Aya? Where is Noor? I can't recognize them. They became parts. Their bodies spreading everywhere, swimming in blood. This holy and noble blood, it's not my daughter's. It's everyone's daughters. They are human as everyone. Mayar was decapitated for nothing they did. And there was no reason to be killed. It's the craziness. As my daughter Bisan said, to meet terrorism with terrorism or violence with violence doesn't solve any problem. We must focus on treating diseases. No child was born violent or terrorist. Violence and terrorism are symptoms of a disease, and we must focus on treating the disease from its roots, that we are human and we are people. We are looking for our freedom to be free, and no one should pay any price to get his freedom. No one should be killed to get his freedom. And the first message of support came from my son, Muhammad, who was 12 years old. I started to think of my future and my children's future. What can I do for those who were severely wounded? And to think of my son, what is he going to do? To be crazy, to be violent. What do we call terrorist, extremist? He wasn't born terrorist or extremist. We must ask ourselves, why did we push our children to be extremist and terrorist? And we are the ones to be blamed and ashamed of.
Dr. Abulash, as soon as it happened, you called your friend Shlomi Elder, the Israeli journalist. And one of the things you said to him, apart from my God, they've killed my daughters, one of the things you said to him was, what have we done? You didn't say, what have you done? You said, what have we done? What did you mean by that?
At the same time of shelling the house, I was supposed to be interviewed live by Israeli TV. So I called my friend, and it was a moment of moral courage from my friend when he opened the speaker to spread the message and the appeal and the world to witness what is happening in Gaza Strip. And the second day, I said to my daughter Shada, the blood and souls of your sisters, when she was in the hospital, is not futile. It saved others' lives. As Prime Minister Ehud Olmert announced unilateral ceasefire, we need to prevent and to focus on saving, not to treat, and to predict and to project the future.
Dr. Abulash, do you think that the Israelis find it hard to accept what they do to the Palestinians?
Before this tragedy. They were focused and seeing by one eye just to see their suffering and their side. And they looked at the Palestinians as and the Gazans different, just to be focused on their own interest, till this tragedy was broadcasted to open the eyes of the Israeli public, the international community, the Palestinians, and everywhere, to ask, what are we doing? Where are we going? This doctor, we saw him. We listened to him. We know him. It's his daughters. And I said, don't ask the Palestinians about what did Izzeldin do and what is he doing. Ask the Israelis about my daughters, because they believe in themselves. And it opened the eyes and hope. This change is not a transient, not to be emotional, but to be sustainable and to be a new approach in life and to work for it.
Was there anguish in Israel for what had happened?
I can say to you, I speak about the Israeli public, my colleagues, my friends, the people whom I don't know, who came to visit from everywhere, Muslims, Jewish, Christians, Druze, Bedouins. It's a moment of a human awakening, the conscience to wake up and to say enough, but we need this momentum to continue.
We are nearly out of time, but I know that you wanted to read a poem at the end of our conversation. Are you ready for that?
Yes.
Would you like to do that?
This poem, which was written by whom? By a woman. She is a woman with heart who knew my daughter Bisan in the peace camps. But if I want to go and to define her as you define David, I may say she is an Israeli Jewish woman. But beyond all, she is a woman. She is a mother with heart, which is more full and more wealthy than other definitions, where love resides for each of us who is looking to find the love and the happiness we all lost. In memory of Bisan, I long to touch you, Bisan, one more time, to hug you, to tell you how sorry I am that your mom died. But now you too are gone. Your smiling face, your gentle way, your softness, your non-judgmental words, your way, your pain for your people, your way of life, your dreams, aspirations, and your hope for peace. Just days before the war, I spoke with your dad. He gave me your phone number. It's still in my car. Every day I glance at the number, seeing your name, Bisan. I wish I had spoken with you more, but I didn't have the guts. I spoke with you 3 days before you died. I told you that I am praying for your safety. My prayers were not heard. Through the shelling, the bombing, the Qassams, the smoke, I feel I have been betrayed by God, by my country, by the cruelty of humanity, by the warmongers, by those who think violence is the solution. And with all of this, I have been given a gift to have spent 6 weeks with Shada, Izzeddin, and Ghaida. I heard no words of revenge, no hatred. I heard no anger. I heard the deep belief that peace is possible, even with this enormous loss. I have been strengthened from their strength. I am more determined from their determination. I am more at peace from their peacefulness. Bisan, forgive me for not being able to save you from my own people. Forgive me for giving you hope that peace is possible, and then taking that dream from you. You will always be my symbol of hope, peace, and mostly gentleness. Your dad shared the dream with me. Days after you died, he came into a room full of men, and there you were, sitting amongst them. He asked you, why are you sitting here, Bisan? You know it is not acceptable in our society. You answered, all is fine now, Dad. I am happy and well. I can be here now among the men where I am needed. May no other woman need to die in order to be able to influence the men as you have, Bisan. May we women be heard and heeded, and may the men in this world get the chance to know from deep within their hearts that this is where the answer lies, in their hearts, where love resides.
I couldn't think of a more appropriate moment to end this in conversation. Would you please help me and thank Dr. Abolesh for your time?
Thank you. I can say to you, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. But I want to say, I believe in you. I believe in you. Have hope. Have faith. But most important is to take action. And that we all can make a difference. And I believe in our life, we have priorities. And the priority is the future. But who is the future? Our children, who are the joy and the happiness in this life. Can we start from now, each of us, to act and to do something, to spread a message, and don't underestimate your action. It's a matter of action. And that moment, this world, I believe, and I am determined that not to relax or to rest till I meet my daughters one day, telling them, your souls and the blood made a difference in others' lives with wisdom, kind words, and good deeds. God bless you, and thank you. But I can. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.